the, I'd say, beautiful noise of the Edinburgh Fringe. There's never anywhere silent to interview, but there is always an interview worth doing. In some ways, this is a catch of interview, because I'm joined by...
Ross Erickson.
And...
Michelle Yim.
And we're talking about a company that has always brought its work back to the Fringe, because it's successful work. But also, what you're doing, what so many shows aren't doing, is you're not just resting on your laurels, you're creating new work. And there's a new show here at the Fringe. What's it called?
The Straw Man.
Okay, that's an intriguing title, Ross. So tell us a bit about The Straw Man.
Well, to be quite honest, Paul, it's all your fault. See, last year you said to me that, yes, I like the way you do things. You always take things from the past and sort of a bit of zeitgeist to it. So I thought it's about time I did something more zeitgeisty. So I've set this right now. It's very contemporary, and it's about, it's going to sound very odd, this, but it's about the thoughts of a working art class individual, man in this case, in our modern society, with the confusing aspects that surround us now. Of Generation X, we invented most of the best genres of music. We partied in fields until 2 o'clock in the morning, and still got up for work on Mondays. And we did all the great things. And now the next generation are confusing us, because they seem to be... Well, I just heard them called Generation Sensible the other day. They have named this next generation Generation Sensible, and I think, God, I'm glad I wasn't part of Generation Sensible.
And so two things on that. One, because I've been talking about that and talking to people about it. One is that you've now decided, you know, because you've... And you may, again, you've ploughed history for some really good theatre work. And history can have a lot to say to us today. But also you decided to have a look at now and maybe the future. The second thing also was that I was hearing that, you know, I'm 51. My parents, you know, in their 80s, they are... My mum's on Facebook, you know, she goes down to Costa to chat with her mates. In some ways, the sensible generation is bearing more relationship to the grandparents that came out of those world wars.
Yeah, funny enough, I was talking to somebody the other day about that. It does seem to be, we're bookended by two very, very strict and very 1950s-style generations, whether they think it or not. The younger generation, they don't smoke, they don't drink, they don't have inappropriate sex, they definitely don't take as many drugs, and they just don't seem to be having any fun. And it's a weird idea. And we've been doing a lot of work with universities in that. So I've been meeting a lot of university students of a certain age, and it's weird how they seem to qualify themselves every time they speak to you. Like, you know, somebody will walk up to you and go, "Hello, yes, well, I'm an intersectional feminist, and I'm cisgendered, but I believe in the fluidity of gender, and I'm not a racist." And you think, well, that's very nice, thank you very much.
So in some ways, I mean, so just so we're clear here, people need to be respected. People need, you know, and the Me Too movement and all that, people have every right to be safe in the world, and we should be safe, and we should, you know, be in a world where we can define who we are. But what you're suggesting, and it may not be a result of that, but there's an undercurrent in culture which is more about, maybe it's the corporate thinking, about having a strategy for life and about defining yourself more by what you don't do than the risks you take.
That's very true. And you do wonder if we've let this current generation down by telling them they can be exactly what they want to be, giving them medals for coming last and things like that. So their expectations of life are far too much. We haven't let them know about the things that can go wrong, about how hard it is, and there isn't instant gratification. So there is that, but there's also this Orwellian thing hanging around behind. When you look at things on Twitter and Facebook, how we have newspeak and doublethink, how we get rid of the unpeople from our television series and our films because of their sex crimes. And the whole thing about Big Brother, this idea that Big Brother exists. In Orwell's book, Big Brother was a figment of the imagination of the ruling classes. And now we have this weird thing called patriarchy. And when you look at the propagation of it, you do wonder who's actually propagating it. Is it some sort of mysterious organization? Could it even be the feminists? I'm going to probably die for saying that. But these are things and questions I like to explore. And the whole thing about Straw Man is I don't give any answers, I just ask all the questions.
But also, just so we're clear, because we're on very dangerous ground here, you're not saying that, you know, say if someone is a criminal and has harmed people, that they've got a right to do that. What you're saying is what goes along with that territory could be that then what we become as a result of that. And we shouldn't tolerate, you know, evil in the world in the forms it takes. But that doesn't mean we then have to default to, you know, a kind of paralysing safety.
No. Yeah, exactly. There is a lot of evil in the world and we should call out the evil, but there is one issue. It's always a question of who is the bad guy. You get people on Twitter now shouting fascist or Marxist or alt-right or alt-left or Gammon's the new one, and they start shouting insults at each other and they're not listening to the other person's argument. And, you know, you might disagree with half of what that person says, but that means you agree with half of what they say.
How did that become a piece of theatre?
Oh, my God, I have no idea. Oh. You gave him the idea, Paul. You see, I'm still sticking to my history. I'm doing a one-woman show on Anna May Wong, who is a Chinese-American Hollywood actress in the 1930s.
But then he
has gone off to write about this modern contemporary thing that he wouldn't let me read until like 2 days ago we started the preview. Yeah.
So you're his partner, but in this case as collaborator... and you created work together.
I actually have collaboration on this one. It's purely on him.
So this has become your rite of passage, your labour of love, and it needed its own space.
I think it's more therapy. Everybody's doing therapy these days on the fringe, aren't they? Every comedian's doing it, so I thought I better have some therapy as well. And plus, you know, somebody, I can't remember who it was, I think it was Robert at We Review, said there is nothing controversial on the fringe this year. And I thought, yes, they're right, because everybody's doing plays that are on feminism and gender issues and everything. I thought, no, let's write something controversial. Let's write that white man won't moaning thing that everybody says they've always seen but never seen. So I'm it. So come and see me.
So in a way, final question, in a good way, but in a dangerous way, you're scarily uptight at the moment.
I'm massively uptight at the moment. I can hear the torches being lit and the pitchforks sharpened at this very moment. Little thumbs ready on Twitter. So, yes, I'm very nervous about it. But we've had a great response from the audiences we've had. You know, people seem to understand where we're coming from. So the hardest thing I've ever written, just go and get the balance in there, hoping I've not left a chink in there where somebody can come launching and go bigot, misogynist, whatever.
A challenge to go and see this show.
A chink like me. I don't mind, not at all. You see, that's the difference. I think that's the thing about this, you know, well, nowadays, everybody is saying, oh, racism, and you can't say slope, you can't say chink. I don't bloody care what people say. I don't mind.
And now the weather.